Hello and welcome to Haaretz Weekly, your audio guide to Israel, the Middle East and the Jewish world. I'm Simon Spungin. On today's show... Winds of change indeed are blowing through Israel. For the first time since 2009, Benjamin Netanyahu is not Prime Minister. On Sunday evening, the Knesset voted in a government of change, headed by Naftali Bennett and Yair Lapid. In so doing, it brought to an end the longest consecutive term of office in Israeli history. Whether or not it brought down the curtain on what has unquestionably been an illustrious political career remains to be seen. With me in the studio to discuss Netanyahu's legacy and future, as well as the task facing the new government, I'm delighted to welcome back Ravit Hecht. Hi, Ravit, how are you?
Hi, great, thank you.
Also with us is someone who spent an unhealthy amount of time thinking, talking and writing about Netanyahu, Anshul Pfeffer. How are you going to fill the existential void in this post-BB era, Anshul?
I'm still in denial.
Not just a river in Egypt. So we say welcome to the post-BB era, and obviously that's technically correct. But I get a sense that Netanyahu is going to loom very large in our lives in the months and years to come. Ravit, is opposition leader Netanyahu more dangerous than Prime Minister Netanyahu?
They are both very dangerous, but I don't think that there is any Prime Minister who would like to have a opposition leader like Netanyahu. We could see what he was capable of during the early 90s, and now he's much more confident, much more veteran, much more sophisticated, and much more dangerous. I think that Netanyahu's genuine belief is that without him being a prime minister, Israel is going to be erased or something like that. I think that this is his real authentic thought and fear. And that's why he will be a very tough leader of the opposition. I think that in the coming weeks, the Likud case and Netanyahu himself, they're going to put forward many right-wing bills, and MKs of Yamina and Gideon Saar's party used to bring in order to embarrass the new government and to prove that this is an extreme-left government. And I think that Netanyahu, his plan is to sabotage and to lead to the fall of this government in about a year and maybe a year and a half, something like that. This is the period that he noted.
He has vowed to stay on and to fight to oust this government.
Of course, he won't give up his position in the Likud, and the Likud for now backs him up. I mean, there is no real opposition there to Netanyahu because now the Likud members, they feel that they liked him the most in this position, that he was ousted, he was betrayed, he was persecuted. I mean, they feel that now he is the ultimate victim, and that's the way they loved him the most.
Would it not be easier for him to fight his court case? Just a reminder, he's still facing three charges of bribery, fraud, and breach of trust, without also being the leader of the opposition?
No way.
Perhaps
no way, because being the leader of the opposition, it's the only way to go back to the prime minister position. And I think that Netanyahu learned Olmert's lessons, that being on a trial while you are prime minister is much, much better than being in this position while you are a simple citizen.
So the medium ground is being leader of the opposition. I mean, last time he lost an
leader
election.
In order to go back
in a year and a half to
Balfour again. Yeah, sure.
But being leader of the opposition doesn't give him any advantage or any edge in the court case itself, right?
First of all, he still will be the leader of a camp which is much more homogeneous than the government. The opposition now is less diverse and united, you know. The main reason is to be in the right and the most attractive position as he said yesterday, he didn't lie. He said we would come back, and sooner is better, or something like that. I don't remember the exact quote, but this is his motivation. This is his plan, and it makes sense because it's crucial to him to be a prime minister, or at least in a very high position, while he has this battle on court.
His farewell speech to the Knesset, or maybe it's just his au revoir speech to the Knesset yesterday, it was a kind of a greatest hits performance. He was playing all of his famous songs. He went out all guns blazing, Holocaust, leftist, conspiracies, Iran, election fraud, Iran, FDR.
Also nice slogans. It was also a slogan like the government of Marana and Anana. It was fabulous. Yes.
Yeah, and he even threw in a new one, Italian restaurants in the suburbs. Mm-hmm. Right? Do you think he can stick it out in opposition? Can he last the course?
It will be better.
We'll see more of the fiery BB.
Much more. Much more, yeah.
I disagree with Ravit on that. I think that we'll see for the next 2 or 3 months this very pumped up, very aggressive Netanyahu. You know, he'll be a fighting leader of the opposition. I'm much less certain that we'll see that in 4 or 5 months. I think once the high holidays are over, if the government passes, as they're planning, to a 2-year budget, which would more or less secure the government almost from any major challenge. You need a constructive no confidence motion. In other words, you need not just to beat the government in a vote to bring it down. You need to actually have a majority of the Knesset voting for a new prime minister. I don't see that happening now. They've more or less all burnt their bridges with the Netanyahu bloc. So I think if in 3 or 4 months the government manages to stay together post-budget, I think that Netanyahu will have a very big problem with remaining leader of the opposition in the Knesset. Now, as Ravit said, he has to be the Knesset leader of the opposition to get back in, unless there's another election, then he can run again for the Knesset. But he'll be limited as a Knesset member. He's not allowed outside income. Now, this is his window of opportunity for earnings to fly off to around the world, six-figure speaking gigs, a book deal, all these things that he needs now, also because he wants to make the money, also because he wants to travel in style, which he won't be able to do anymore, paid by the state because he's no longer the prime minister, and he needs that money for his legal bills. So I think there's a temptation to leave the Knesset sometime in 4 or 5 months, I think, could prove to be too strong once again if this government manages to hold together until then and show that it has some kind of longevity. Then the question is, will Netanyahu remain leader of Likud? Because there's nothing in the Likud constitution which says that leader of Likud has to be a Knesset member. So perhaps he'll stay leader of Likud sort of in exile, and there'll be a parliamentary leader of Likud. Now, that was a problem for Netanyahu because he's still traumatized from leaving Sharon in charge in 1999. And he thought Sharon's this old, discredited politician. He won't take over Likud. He'll just be sort of a caretaker until I come back, Sharon, as we know, proved otherwise. So maybe he'll find someone like Yariv Levin or Steinitz who are not rivals.
Yariv Levin is not interested.
Yeah, Yair Levin doesn't want to be the Likud leader. At least that's what we think. That's what Netanyahu thinks. Yeah. So it's not one of the trio of Yisrael Katz, Nir Barkat, and who am I missing?
Edelstein.
And Yuri Edelstein, who are now seen as sort of leaders in waiting. So Netanyahu can stay leader of Likud, but they'll have to leave the Knesset if he wants to make money. Now, leaving the Knesset in the end means also giving up on his big media pulpit. You know, leader, he's not the prime minister anymore, so it's not the same kind of pulpit, but still, leader of the opposition, especially someone like Netanyahu with his standing and with his rhetoric capabilities, gives him the opportunity to be in the news almost every day. Leader of Likud, who's flying off to give lectures abroad and is not a Knesset member, is a different matter. But I think the temptation to make that money, and he needs that. I mean, okay, he has money, but he doesn't want to spend all of his money now on this very expensive team of lawyers who are representing him in court and will continue for the next year or two. I think that will prove to be a very, very strong temptation to leave the Knesset. And I won't be surprised if by the end of 2021, Netanyahu will be a private citizen, perhaps with a sort of honorary title of Likud leader.
Mm. There were reports that he wants to have a leadership election within the Likud as soon as possible, right?
Yeah.
Is he that confident that he has Likudnik's continued
support?
Yes, and
he has a right to... He's right. I mean, now in the Likud, no one will go against Netanyahu.
And you know, he's at peak popularity because, as Ravid said, he's now at peak victimhood. If he runs now, he'll probably win to 90% of the vote.
Yeah.
If he waits for another 6 months,
he want to enforce his leadership, actually, and to
however,
to establish it.
Chaim Katz, who is the head of Likud Secretariat, is saying no. We just had we had the leadership primary a year and a half ago when he beat Gideon Saar. It's an expensive thing to do. The party is in a deficit, so the Likud establishment, which is less pro Netanyahu than the Likud membership, is not eager to hold a primaries right now.
Mm. Last night there were spontaneous celebrations at the fall of Netanyahu. I don't think I remember anything like that in Israeli political history. People taking to the streets when...
No, it happened before when Ehud Barak won the elections.
But that was more celebrating Barak's victory than Netanyahu's defeat. This was people coming out to celebrate the electoral or the political defeat of a sitting Israeli prime minister. And at the pro-Netanyahu demonstrations, and they were very small, obviously, there were as many Likud flags as Israeli flags. I think that's probably emblematic of Netanyahu's hijacking of the party and making it his party, and almost a case of mass Stockholm syndrome.
But in that case, these are flags which are given out by the organizers, who are people who are connected to Netanyahu's office. You know, they have a pile of Likud flags, a pile of Israeli flags. They hand them out equally. The flags that you saw in Rabin Square last night in Tel Aviv, they were people bringing their flags from their homes. I don't think it was organized by any of the parties. But what's interesting is that if we go back 22 years ago, when the last time Netanyahu lost in 99 and there was the big celebrations in Rabin Square, the people there had voted for the new prime minister. They voted for Ehud Barak. I don't think anybody in Rabin Square last night had voted for Naftali Bennett.
It would be a very small rally if it was just Yamina voters coming out.
They're as big as Meretz, but perhaps not so many that live in Tel Aviv.
Exactly. So listen, our colleague Noah Landau pointed out on Twitter that while some were celebrating the end of the BB era, the new coalition is already committed to increasing funding for Ariel University, building roads in the occupied territories, and safeguarding Israeli interests in Area C. A taste of things to come, right?
Yes, but I think that those issues, important as they are, and they're very important, are not the center, okay, of our discourse or our society. I think that Netanyahu's biggest accomplishment is breaking or weakening, I don't know, the old established elites, and to challenge them, surrounding himself by Mizrahi and Sephardic politicians and closed aides. And I think that what we see now is more like tribal, cultural discourse, which is much more emotional and much more important than dealing with those situations, okay?
Mm.
So what we can see now, that one camp or block or whatever it is called is a biggest nemesis falling down. So that's why they are happy, and they prefer Bennett, who is much more, or I don't know if Bennett specifically, but of course Gideon Saar and other members of these coalitions are much more right-wing supporters than Netanyahu. Okay, so those issues are not on the table. You know, they're not so significant.
So the main issue facing the new government, and everybody I've asked about this says that survival is first and foremost on the new government's agenda. But are you saying that it will be more looking inward at healing rifts within Israel than, you know, the Palestinians, Iran, and so on? It's a government of internal change rather than policy change?
Yes, but I think that without this bloc, any representation of this bloc, it will be very hard to heal something, because now half of the country, okay, feels that It has no voice or expression in the new government. And the other half felt the same. So I can't see a potential for healing. I do think that the atmosphere will be much better without Netanyahu, okay? Like we can, I'm not so familiar with the American politics, but I can recognize, as far as I know, that since Biden was elected, the discourse or the discussion is a little bit more calm than it used to be. So maybe this achievement, if we will have this achievement, it will be great.
It's enough of a challenge.
I mean, it's very much a matter of perception, because the both Netanyahu and certainly many of his Likud proxies or colleagues have been trying to make this out as this is the Ashkenazi elite government coming to kick the Sfaradim out of power. Now that's quite frankly bullshit, because there is no more Ashkenazi elite than Netanyahu himself. This is a government which has a Mizrahi woman who is going to be the education minister, an Mizrahi woman who is going to be the energy minister.
I'm talking about the electorate, I mean, and the voters.
No, but the electorate and voters are
being... It's very important.
But their consciousness has been molded by Netanyahu. There's no reality behind that. Okay, so the previous government had Shas. Shas is an oligarchic party. Just they have this whole thing about, oh, we're these Mizrahi underdogs. No, they're not. Arya Dery is a rich friend of the rich. There is nothing underdog about Arya Dery. And the people who vote have been doing that because Netanyahu, with help from Dery, for the last 30 years has been setting this myth. Now, this new government is closer to what we call the periphery or the other Israel and so on than the outgoing government. Now, the challenge of this new government is to try and change those perceptions, because, yes, Yair Lapid and Naftali Bennett are as elitist as Netanyahu, and Netanyahu has branded them successes elitist. But I think that a lot of people in Israel are ready for that perception to be changed, because as you noted, the size of these protests against the new government and in the support of Netanyahu have been tiny. And we saw also in the last election, all the Likud strongholds turnout was down. They went down from 1.3 to 1 million. Places like Afula, Ashkelon, Be'er Sheva, Likud's vote was depressed by 8, 9, 10%, even more. There is an opportunity here now for this new government to come and say, you've been told this myth that Likud and Shas are representing the underdogs. Sorry, that's simply not true. They haven't helped these towns any more than previous governments, and they haven't represented you really. But the question is, you know, this is a huge myth for a new government to battle. It has to be realized that there's very little truth behind this myth of Likud and Shas representing them better.
So, Ravid, in general, are you happy with this new coalition, that women, Arabs, LGBT ministers, one disabled minister, and not a single minister currently facing a criminal indictment?
I'm happy that Netanyahu is no longer prime minister, and that's it. This coalition, it's not the best coalition that we could seek, but okay.
Under the circumstances, we'll take it.
If this is the price, we will pay it. I mean,
even if that's
Taliban
price
as prime minister, Gideon Saar as justice minister, it's not a simple
dream. Chaked as interior minister,
it's less bothering me. But still, Avigdor Lieberman, sorry, as a finance minister. I mean,
finance minister controlling finance committee in the Knesset.
Yeah.
Before we maybe, hopefully, stop talking about Bibi for a while, let's talk about the stink bomb that he dropped in the Knesset yesterday before he left, with his comments on Iran, Biden, and the nuclear deal. Just part of his efforts to muddy the waters and make life difficult for the incoming government?
Certainly. I mean, you couldn't put a bigger challenge to a nationalist prime minister like Naftali Bennett. Naftali Bennett is still a nationalist. The fact that he's sitting with left-wingers and Arabs will not make him less of a nationalist. At least one hopes he will be, but it probably won't happen that soon. Iran, the Iran deal, the spectre of an Israeli existential threat, and obviously he brought up the Holocaust and FDR and deciding not to bomb the train track to Auschwitz. I mean, it was all there, and Naftali Bennett has to follow this act. Now, hopefully, Bennett will realize that he can't follow this act. There is only one Netanyahu. That kind of bombastic rhetoric, shameless bombastic rhetoric, is Netanyahu's trademark. I got the feeling at some point when Bennett was speaking that suddenly he realized that all this shouting, that all this heckling that was going on was actually a sign of desperation, that they had run out of tricks against him, and they were trying to disrupt his inaugural speech because they didn't have any more tricks up their sleeve. They had no more defectors. They knew they were losing. And I think that there's a point where Naftali Bennett also has to start growing up, and maybe we saw a bit of that yesterday during the speech. He was very nervous at the beginning, but then sort of at some point he kind of like stood back, looked at all those Likud and Shas and you know, the rest of the MKs who were heckling him, smiled, calmed down, and said, actually, I'm winning. And that's what he needs to realize. Now he's prime minister, he doesn't have to prove anymore that he's Netanyahu. And you know, we've had this thing in Israeli politics for years now, what I call the wannabebies. You had all these like upcoming politicians saying, I'm going to build my career around Netanyahu, and that, you know, that's going to be my path to power. Yair Lapid was like that at the beginning as well. I think the last couple of years Yair Lapid has realized that actually the way to do things is not to be Netanyahu anymore. And maybe Bennett has realized that as well. What do you think?
If I may add, I think that Lapid's reaction yesterday was magnificent. I mean, you could see the process this person went through, because he said, okay, I'm not going to lecture now or to read my, you know, this classic generic speech about unity and the power of Israel and et cetera, because the way you behave, I mean, look at you. Look at yourself, you know. And it was so effective, not only as a person, you know, that he was like the bigger person or the adult one or something like that. He also, I think, understood the essence of this political situation that most of the Israelis, including the left-wing supporters, they have enough of it, of this behavior, of this chaos, of this madness of Netanyahu.
And the way he used his old mother that is sitting there in looking on and perfect. Saying, no, I brought my, you know, despite her age, my mother came all the way from Jerusalem. I'm not going to shame her now by making a speech while you guys are heckling. I mean, it was theater, but it was also a total class act. Mm.
And he has been a class act throughout this negotiation period, right? The fact that he was willing to let Bennett go first.
From the moment when he realized, after the first of the four elections, that it had been a mistake for Blue and White to present him as also as the other prime minister, because in the beginning his deal with Benny Gantz was that he would rotate, assuming Benny Gantz had won, and so on. When he gave that up before the second election, I think that was the point where he suddenly changed his whole strategy from becoming prime minister to removing Netanyahu. He understood that what he needs before becoming prime minister is the mantle of the man who removes Netanyahu. It's even more important than becoming prime minister. Obviously, he's been very well advised by Mark Melman, the Democrat, who was actually in the Knesset yesterday. They were seen sitting together, him and Lapid, that first of all, prioritize removing Netanyahu. Neutralize your own ego about becoming prime minister. And he's done that for almost 2 years, and it's worked. I mean, it's taken time. Netanyahu is still a very
adversary. He gained a lot of power and many of us, for example.
Yeah, many, we were sitting in the Harrods building, I think.
Exactly. We underestimated him.
3 years ago, I don't think you would have found many people in this building saying having a good word for Lapid, and vice versa. Lapid had blocked all of us on Twitter. He wouldn't meet Aretz. He wouldn't interview us.
He tried
us
to look like a right-wing supporter, like half settler, like half ultra-Orthodox, whatever. And then he understood since that point in the last 2.5 years, no bullshit, just removing Netanyahu. This is like the agenda. This is the North Star that he gazed. And he managed to do that.
Yeah, and we've seen him transform into the responsible grown-up.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, he only won 17 seats in this election. I think this was the last election in which Yesh Atid suffered from that glass ceiling. I think that glass ceiling has shattered over the last 2 months. In the next election, we're already seeing the polls. They're in the mid-20s, obviously, what are polls? But I think a lot of people from all parts of Israeli politics who would not give Yair Lapid the time of day because they saw him as being this shallow, populist, opportunist figure, are now suddenly treating him as really as a responsible grown-up, and it'll work for him whenever the next election is held.
And he's now foreign minister, obviously. Jonathan Leese, writing in today's paper, said that Lapid, as foreign minister, has his work cut out for him after years of Netanyahu suffocating the foreign service. And the headline of Jonathan's piece mentioned three issues on Lapid's agenda: renewing contact with the Palestinians, cozying up to Biden, and thirdly, Iran. Are they not the same thing, in essence, those three issues?
The real question is, whose job is it going to be? Because we've been used for the last 12 years that the foreign minister was the foreign minister to all the countries which Netanyahu doesn't care about. But Netanyahu took care of the Iranian file, he took care of Arab countries, he took care of Russia, he took care of the United States.
Mm-hmm. A couple of African countries thrown in there.
When he had the time. It'll be interesting to see the division of labor between Bennett and Lapid. What kind of responsibility will Lapid have as foreign minister? He's also the alternate prime minister. Don't forget, we have a third ex-alternate prime minister in the mix, Benny Gantz. So and Avigdor Lieberman as, you know, as this like supreme economic overlord. We don't, you know, this is a cabinet in which the prime minister is probably the weakest of the ministers, because every other minister now has a very well-defined policy brief. Mm. What is Bennett's
and
responsibility?
More experience with dealing Netanyahu.
And more political power through their parties. Yeah. What is Naftali Bennett's responsibility now as prime minister? I don't think Bennett has an answer for that yet.
Well, I don't think anybody does. Our former colleague, Shmuel Rosner, wrote in the New York Times, he posed an interesting question. He asked whether Israel actually no longer has a prime minister, but in fact has some two-headed beast guarding the gates and keeping Bibi away, a hound of Hades for Israel, if you like. Is that accurate?
That's not a bad analogy, but also I think that there is, you know, after Israel has been at the extreme of prime ministerial power, and Israel is not a presidential system. Mm. You know, the system is a parliamentary system. The prime minister is supposed to be the first among equals. Now, Netanyahu, probably since David Ben-Gurion, has been the most powerful prime minister, has totally marginalized both his own cabinet and the Knesset. So now we're going to the opposite extreme of a prime minister who's the leader of a tiny party, who is surrounded in cabinet by much more powerful political figures. Maybe that will help Israel eventually getting back to the idea, the middle path, where the prime minister is first among equals, but he's not all powerful like Bibi was.
Mm. One of the ex-prime ministers, who is not Netanyahu, told me that the hardest mission of a foreign minister is holding cocktail and speaking English properly at the same time, something like that. I think it's a little bit more than that, but I think Lapid's main goal and main job will be to maintain this government and to do what he has done till this moment. I mean, keeping those guys together and keeping Bennett, okay? So he's like the real prime minister. I think so, politically.
So another of the immediate challenges that this government, the new government, might be facing is the planned flag march in Jerusalem tomorrow. There's meant to be a situation discussion this evening to see if it'll go ahead. But it is planned to march through, you know, near Damascus Gate, a famous flashpoint in East Jerusalem. Will the new government handle this any differently to the what we've been calling the pyromaniac government that's just left?
Well, as you mentioned, there's the new public security minister, Omar Bar-Lev, will be meeting the police commissioner tonight, and there may be changes to what was already allowed, which is not actually through Damascus Gate. They're sort of going to march down towards Damascus Gate, do a bit of dancing, if you want to call it that, close by, and then go up the hill again towards the less contentious area near Jaffa Gate. But still, this is a test to the government from both sides. Mm. It's a test to the government from the right wing, saying you have to show us that you can also insist on Israeli sovereignty in Jerusalem. And it's obviously a test from the Palestinian side, saying, you know, push us and we'll... And your first the first week of your new government, there'll be violence in East Jerusalem and perhaps even rocket launches from Gaza. Actually, I'm surprised that there wasn't like at least one rocket last night just to kind of mark the event. And we've seen Hamas or other groups in Gaza doing that. I'm much more concerned about more long-term issues in Jerusalem. Our chief Jerusalem correspondent, Nir Hassan, has had some very strong reports in recent days and weeks about how aggressive the policing, the whole policing of Jerusalem has been in recent weeks and months. And this was always an issue. It's not something which happened with one government or with one public security minister, but certainly there was the backing from ex-public security minister Amir Ohana to this type of aggressive policing. I'll be very interested to see if Omer Bar-Lev and also his new deputy, Segalovich from Yesh Atid, who is himself a former very senior police officer, if they will seriously look into the issue of policing in Jerusalem, because it so obviously has sparked off so many riots in recent weeks and months. There are root causes for what's happening in Jerusalem police, and I hope the new minister begins to look at that.
I think that those marches, if we go back to your question, are nothing but ugly provocation that should be forbidden by any government. It's not a matter of politics side. It's a matter of organized, well-functioned police and state which control the complicated reality in Jerusalem, as Anshel described. So it's a matter of responsibility. It's not a matter of right or left dilemma.
And so far, the new government perhaps has shown some signs of responsibility.
We don't know.
It's too early to say.
It's just born.
Listener, before we sign off, just a reminder that Haaretz Weekend, the glossy supplement that we launched last week, is still available on your podcatcher of choice. I chatted with Judy Maltz, Ruthie Schuster, Ariel David and Adrian Hennigan about the new government's policy on state and religion, Judean kashrut habits, and a biopic of Menachem Begin. Please do give it a listen. And that's your show for today. Many thanks to Ravit Hecht.
Thank you very much.
And to Anshel Pfeffer.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks too to our producer Aaron Ehrlich and to you, listener. We'll be back on Friday with another episode of Haaretz Weekend, when, among other things, we'll be hearing about a rapper from Dimona who, along with other members of the Black Israelite community, is facing deportation from Israel. Until then, shalom from Tel Aviv.